Hi, welcome to the Design Thinking Roundtable, a podcast which explores various aspects of design and how it can create change and social impact. I'm Anne-Laure Fayard, an ethnographer who researches, teaches, and practices human-centered design with a focus on social innovation and collaboration. And I love having conversations on design with passionate and mindful designers. Today, I have the pleasure to be in conversation with Ezio Manzini. For over three decades, Ezio has been working in the field of design for sustainability and social innovation, considered a major driver for sustainable changes. These two joint interests led him to start DESIS, an international network of schools specifically active in the field of design for social innovation and sustainability. Currently, he's president of DESIS Network and honorary professor at the Politecnico di Milano. He has been guest professor in several design schools worldwide, such as Elisava Design School and Engineering, Barcelona, Tongji University, Shanghai, University of the Arts, London, CPUT Cape Town, and Parsons, the New School for Design in New York. Ezio has written many books and papers on service design and social innovation. His most recent books are Design When Everybody Designs, Politics of the Everyday, and lately, Livable Proximity. So, Ezio, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, I was thinking of all the work you've been doing as a, you know, designer in terms of social innovation, sustainability, and really trying to provoke us to think about how can we build a sustainable and resilient culture. And this is becoming even more relevant when we look at the current situation in the world today with all the crises that we are facing. We're going through these profound and multiple crises. And I know you've been thinking a lot about the relationship between this crisis, the presence or absence of will or capacity to care and the role of design. Can you tell me a bit more about, like, where do you see the role of design and of care in the current, you know, world we are living in today?
Yes. Thank you for this question, because you permit me really to start from what I think is a main keyword for anybody is willing to do something for sustainability. In a very, from the very general and also philosophical discussion about what does it mean to try to move toward a sustainable society, to the very practical one, that is the crisis of the, I think more or less everywhere, at least in the Western countries, the crisis of the health and social care system. And therefore, it's a very strong word, because it connects something that is very deep with something that is also very practical. And in between the two, the philosophical thinking and the practice, you can have a very interesting double link. So for me, now I say something that is not only my thought, so that I took from many other people. And as you know, of course, care is a notion that exists in practically all the languages that I know. And in all the languages, it has the same kind of meaning, that could be very precise care in the sense of taking care of somebody that has some problem, but also the very general attitude that means the attention, that means having an empathic way of looking to somebody, to something. And care, as we will see, require time, require energy. So it's something that to be done, ask us for some effort, some engagement. So we can say, okay, but care is so normal thing that always exists. So why are we talking about care today? Because something happened, both philosophically and practically, that asks us to rethink the notion of care, what is the general meaning, but also what is the specificity of this moment. So where to start from? We can start from the practicalities, and afterward we can see also the philosophical side. The practicalities, we can move from one book that has been written maybe 30 years ago by McKnight, that was the Careless Society. And he said already at that point that in the moment in which the society become more and more a society based on service, we lose care because we substitute this kind of relationship that is a direct relationship, one person in face to another one, and having a kind of exchange, that is an exchange of care, with the procedure, that is a procedure of the service, at least in the way in which at that time he intended the service, that are the very clear organization in which you are somebody that is served and somebody that is served. And so the substitution of the normal relationship or care that you had in a family or in a neighborhood or in a society with this kind of services. And he was right. So that kind of services create a kind of dry and cold form of relationships and substitute care. But the idea of the lack of care is not only related to the services. The missing of care is more general than that. I would say that the development of our idea of what the technology is for, create a technology that is something that is to ease our life, to make our life easier. And there is nothing bad on this, of course, per se. But at a certain point, create a distance in between us and everybody else. And therefore, with this distance, for some reason, we see that we have a lack of care. And this is valuable both in the relationship with people, but also in the relationship with the environment. So when we say that the older countrymen had much more care for the environment, they was obliged to have more care for the environment because they was really linked very strictly with the environment. So if they had to treat the land with care, was mandatory because otherwise they discovered that the land was not working anymore. So in some way, moving, if I use the example of the farmers, but it's a kind of a metaphoric example to talk about the overall society. Farmer that is obliged to know very well, to be very near to the nature and to know how it works and to try to develop some way of working that could permit to the ground to regenerate and to continue to produce, so to have care of it, is because it was so near to it. At a certain point, as you know, also philosophically, the notion of care has been put in the center of the interest, especially by the feminist movement internationally since maybe 30 years, also this one. For what I got myself, I've been very impressed by who was saying that you care is a tactile activity. This is Maria della Bella Casa, Maria Puig della Bella Casa, that in this fantastic book, Matter of Care, talk about the fact that you cannot have care without contact. And this is true. If you think, yes, you can organize also, if we move to the very practical caring to an elderly people, caring for somebody that is sick, you can do a lot of things, maybe also digitally or in distance. But at the end of the day, if this person need the milk because he cannot go to the shop, somebody has to do it. If somebody has broken a leg, you need somebody that physically there to help. So it's very clear that care asks us to define where we are physically in the space. So here there is the link in between the notion of care and the notion of proximity. Maybe we will talk about proximity later. But let me say why it became so important, this link in between care and proximity in general, as Maria della Bella Casa says, but for designers in particular. Because if we say, okay, the core of all the relationships, or the relationships that have some value, should be care, we should, and given that we see that we are in the world, let's say, to simplify and careless society, or in any case, society in which there is far less care than necessary, we should design care. But being a relationship in between human beings, care cannot be designed. And here we could have a kind of paradox. So we finally discover that what we should design is design for care, but the object of our design is not designable because of the reason, as I said before. Luckily, relationships, the empathy of people, the feeling to be near, close to the other one, is very personal issue that cannot be designed. And here come another part of the story. So what we can design when we have something as relationship that cannot be designed? And the answer to this question is we can design a context that may the possibility of caring, for instance, or whatever possibility of relationship that we would like to see to people to develop, more probable and possible, but inverted, more possible and maybe probable. What does it mean? It means that you can generate context in which a certain kind of relationships are impossible, physically impossible. And therefore you cannot have that kind of the people, even if they want, they cannot have this kind of relationships. And maybe you can make introduce in your context something that in our design language is the affordance. That is not affordance is a part of the system that do not oblige somebody to do something, but in some way kindly invites. So as a door that is done in a good way, the affordance means that you immediately understand how to open the bed, the one that are done in a bad way, are the one that normally you go and you try to open in the way that you cannot open it. So the fact that this door is designed in the way that is very intuitive how you open it is the affordance. And if we think the affordance are around us, so the environment permit us something, do not permit us something else, invite us to do something in a certain way and not in another one. So the story about how to design for relationships, and in particular, how to design for this very peculiar but fundamental relationship that is a relationship of care, is to design some context that permit it and have some affordance that gently invite the people to move in a certain direction more than in another one. And this is the beginning of what we can discuss about design. And here is where this issue about proximity, for me at least, enter in the discussion.
I really like this idea of that we can, of course, the lack of affordances can prevent us from having relationships and care, but it means also that we can do the other way around and intentionally design for this environment to happen. This notion of care and the notion of relations is really at the core of your recent book, Livable Proximity, Ideas That for the City That Cares. So can you tell me more about what is livable proximity? How does a city that cares look like?
I say, why many people is talking about proximity today? So why are we talking about proximity? Well, also proximity as care is a very normal word that exists in every language since the beginning of the languages, probably. But it was not needed to discuss so much about proximity in the past, pre-modern past, because it was obvious. There was nothing to discuss. The only way to organize a society at every scale was to be nearby. So the only way to communicate was by voice. So yes, you can send a letter also at the time of the Roman or the Greek, but it took months. So you could not really organize the everyday life on letters. You could have the horses or you can have the carriage, but also this was very slow. So at the end of the day, you had to have a system of proximity that had to offer you whatever you needed for your life, not 100%, always there have been something that arrived from very far, but the majority of what you needed. And this created a system of proximity that was dense, diversified. So if you look to the medieval picture, you see that everybody is together doing different things, and also promiscuous, so in between rich and poor, for instance, young and elderly, everything was together because it was the only way to organize from the family toward the society, the cities, and toward the whole society. And at a certain point, the modernism, the story is long and more, I'm simplifying, but started to see this mixture, this hybrid, these promiscuous things, not so good for several reasons, from hygiene, and maybe there was also some reason for that, toward the willing the rich to be more distant, not to see the poor, toward, after a certain point, there probably has been the main motivation, a notion about efficiency and efficiency and scale. So the more, the bigger you make the things, the more effective they are. So making the long story short, we arrived to the idea that it was better to reorganize the society in zoning, creating homogeneous zone in which you are the people that are living, the rich with the rich, the poor with the poor, the zone where you work if it is a factory, the zone you work if it is a commercial and business. And therefore, the idea of this kind of a mesh of different networks has been separated in different monological paths. And the people live in the distance. So in some way, for one century or more, all the energy and all the capability and all the technologies and all the design capability and also organizational capabilities are being used to separate the people, to say, look, now you can do also this, even if you are not there, you can do, you can work with others also if you are far away, et cetera, et cetera. And this has been seen as a value for all the reasons that I said before, and more maybe also for a reason about freedom. So a certain interpretation of freedom. If you are totally detached from all the link that before was needed to in this caring proximity, you can also feel to be individually more free. Unfortunately, after one century of working in this direction, now we see all the problems, because the most evident is the environmental problem that is related to the pollution of all the traffic that this idea generates. But this is only the most evident part of the story, because if you go down also remaining on the environmental and ecological issue, we discover this is a very fragile system. Because it's enough that one of these concentrated monological area have a problem and all the system collapse, where the other system was much more resilient. So there is an issue about resilience that asks to bring things together to create more autonomous subsystems. But also the social issue, the fabric has been totally broken. And therefore we have society that is done only by individuals. And this could also in some moment appear as a condition of freedom, but in reality it's a condition of loneliness. And therefore we have society in which loneliness become a real sickness, a real something that creating the collapse of the society. So both for social and for environmental reason, we see that this idea of a society of distance, if we want to call it in this way, it's a very dangerous perspective. And it's so clear that it's a problem that something started to happen. And what started to happen is the control trend in relation to that trend. For what regards the city, we have had since 40 years somebody that say that that kind of city, so the city dreamed by Le Corbusier, mm-hmm. If you see the image of the La Villa Radieuse, it's a city where there is no city. Mm-hmm. By the point of view, if city is people mixing and doing things together, it's a city of distance. And James Jacobs, mm-hmm. since maybe 40 years ago now, mm-hmm. said that it should be much more recognizing the value of complexity and diversity and density, et cetera, et cetera. But it was still a few people that was saying that, and it was and still is. The main trend is toward the city of distance. With the crisis, becoming more and more clear. And also this side, the COVID and the pandemic necessity to be separated in some way showed to many, many people how important it is to have something that is nearby. So in some way, the discussion that before, I want only to say the discussion is not of yesterday, the discussion started 40 years ago, but it became a discussion for the newspaper, a discussion I will not say for everybody, but for a larger group of people. And this is why so many people now is talking about proximity after the COVID, because people discovered, as often it happens, something that you give, take as a given is not given. And therefore, we started to have different ideas of how to reorganize the city. And the city, the discussion has been mainly on the city, but the discussion could be valuable also for the other places that are not not the cities. And so we had this discussion about proximity. And we discovered that something that in the meantime was happening since 20 years at least, that have been called the social innovation. And so the kind of social innovation that we have is a way discussed and many of us also try to support and help. At the end of the day, it was about care and it was about proximity. So it was a way to bring into the society, into the city, if we are talking about the city, more action, more services, more activities that were more near. And therefore, at the end of the day, what the social innovations bring into the society or in the city, if we are talking about the city, is to improve the diversity of what you can find in your proximity system.
Is there like one, because I'm thinking of like our audience, like one or two examples of these kind of social innovation that are, have been really trying to do, implement this proximity?
It can be seen as I was anticipating before at different level, because normally for many years we are talking about social innovation at the molecular scale, small initiatives. So from the very well-known community gardens, and of course, the garden is the perfect example of an initial proximity. So you take a kind of abandoned land that is, was nothing, so it was not giving anything to the people nearby. And some people take it and start to transform in a place that is not only nice for who like gardening, but it's nice also for the kids that can play, for the elderly that can go to play cards, etc., etc. So this is one of the most obvious. So if you move from when they started 30 years ago to work today, where they are relatively much more diffused, a community garden is a very good example. But not only, if you have the neighborhoods that want in some way to take in their hand the quality of this the environment in which they live, and we have more or less everywhere, not everywhere in the world, but everywhere at least in the in some part of the urban world, the community in Italy we call social street. So the people that go together, that are linked maybe with a simple digital platform and that organize from cleaning the street toward organizing some festivals. So this is typically something that is related to proximity, but you can put in the same many evolution of the idea of welfare toward the community welfare. And the community welfare, the term community linked to welfare, imply that it's not only an issue of a formal professional doctor and nurses, that's of course they are super needed, but it's also an issue about how people in some way support and help each other. And this community welfare cannot be discussed if not at the scale of proximity. And I could continue. Mm-hmm. So there is practically no area of daily life in which you cannot find some example, some of them more successful, some of them less successful, of I call it molecular intervention. But 20 years after, we cannot talk only about this molecular intervention, separated issue, but also as some kind of frame that starts them together. So, and one of the most visible, because they've been very discussed, is the one regarding city, with a term that I use, the city of proximity. And the, many people use the term the 15-minute city or the 10-minute city or something like this. That became very popular because it became one main claim for the campaign of the mayor of Paris some years ago, with the La Ville de Cardeur. But we can take this of Paris because it's interesting per se, because it's very clear from the title. But we can find the same attitude or near to be the same attitude for sure in Barcelona with the idea of the super blocks, the super years. But we can find it also, for instance, in Italy, that of course I know better, in the attitude that they've had in the past years in Milano or in Bologna or in Torino, where they did a lot of things to try to keep together these different molecular initiatives and gave them a frame to recognize them, to give a frame and to generate a vision. And also this is a social innovation. We should say it's a social institutional innovation because it's an innovation. It's a molecular innovation is mainly done by the citizen itself, themselves. And this one, of course, is done also by some part of the institution that is more sensitive and clever. And in my view, anticipate a kind of transformation that should happen in the institution that should be capable to recognize the energy that emerge in the city or in the society and become capable to create going back to what we said at the beginning, creating positive context.
So I just like to piggyback on this idea of like, you know, you had the molecular, you know, grassroots social innovations that were, you know, done by individuals or communities. And as you said, you know, like the idea of like moving to the next step in order to create like more impact and sustainable, you know, systems where you think of a template. And I know in your book, the Politics of the Everyday, you also talk about social infrastructure. So I'm wondering then, you know, what's also the role of, for example, in Western world, the mandate of the public sector and governments in, you know, providing this social infrastructure. So because I think, you know, it's great to have the grassroots, but, you know, you're starting pointing at if we want these things to continue and to, you know, become sustainable and resilient, is like, what's the role of the, you know, you talk also a lot about collaboration in your work. Like, what are the other stakeholders involved in this process?
The social innovation that we have talked about in these 20 years is the one that I mentioned before, group of people that collaborate in doing something in a way that is good for themselves. And at the same time, they are also reweaving the society. And in some way, they are doing something good also for the environment. So this category of social innovation, to last in time, ask for something. And it can start with the most simple technology that they can have, and also in opposition to the institution, and also without any designer in between them. But after a while, there is something that happens that is very well known, that to make it short, the heroes become tired at a certain point. So this kind of energy, as every time that you have innovation, innovation starts with an invention. The inventor is the one that has an incredible energy and is capable to do something that was unforeseeable until the day before. But to make it happen could be very difficult at the beginning. So it needs a lot of energy, time, et cetera, et cetera. So the successful story are the ones in which at a certain point, these social inventions becoming the first stage of social innovation, a kind of early prototype of solution, found technologies, institutions, and design. And so in different way, in different level, all the success story have some intervention from the institutions, from some kind of technology that are specifically designed for that application, and somebody that is not only the normal people with a normal capability of design, that I call the diffuse design as a normal gift for the people, that is sufficient to start, but is not sufficient to go on. It is not sufficient to move from the beginning of, you know what, we can go together and occupy this land and make a community garden. Yeah, let's do it. This is the first step. But and you can do it's a design, so you have to design this activity, but you don't need to have some specific capabilities. So it's a very normal way of designing something for the future. If you want to go on and to transform it in something that remains in a successful way, you need, as I said, you need to really design an organization that can last in time without the burn who participate, because the notion of burnout for who are those heroes has been very, very frequent. What appears from social innovation is evolution in the social institutional innovation is a new idea of public. So a public that is not delivering the final service, but is delivering the conditions that permit to other agents to be active in a certain way. And this is the new kind of infrastructure that in some way is needed. So what we call the social innovation that we were talking before, are some energies in the society that emerge. So at the beginning, the state has been in opposition because it do not understand. It was out of the law. Now there are, in Italy and everywhere, some new norms, some institutions that started to understand that this energy are part of what is needed to maintain a good quality of life in the society, and also maybe hopefully to orient it toward an ecological future.
Great. I think we're going back and in a very nice way to this notion of care we started with and this notion of relationship, but also how we can create the environment or the conditions so that we can, you know, move from this social innovation to more scaling for impact and really, you know, making these things being part of our everyday life and institutions. So I had planned and you told me like, oh, you know, that's going to be too long to talk also about your recent call for, you know, designing for peace, because I think it's going back to your notion of care and of relations, but at another level and some of these implications. So I'm going to take you on this and maybe invite you for a second episode. But I'd like to thank you so much for, you know, both taking us, you know, at the philosophical level, but also reminding us that, you know, good theory is in practice. Our practice has to, you know, be informed by, you know, thinking. So thank you so much, Ezio, for your time.
One thing on this last point. I think I maybe... If I say, given that you said that I was doing like this, it can be not more than that. But for me, this is the way in which the designer should be theory. So I see, I'm very interested in the philosophical side, but I'm very preoccupied for some philosophical discussion also in our environment. They remain only philosophical. So we maybe could be not so deep in philosophy, but we need some philosophy. And we need to immediately link the philosophy to something that is practical, and also vice versa, because the observation in a changing world, in a world that is so changed so fast, is not only that we practitioners have to learn something from the philosopher, but being practitioner means being on the practice. We can see something that otherwise is not visible. And so we can give food for thinking to the philosopher. So it's also the vice versa that is valid. And this is designed to try to bridge the social, cultural issue with the practical ones.
Yeah, and I think it's back to our point of also relations and having conversations. So thank you so much for your time, Ezio, and I think I'm going to get you to come again to talk more about some of his issue, the public designing for peace. Thank you so much.
And to everybody who will listen. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Design Thinking Roundtable, produced by the DESIS Lab and ERA Chair in Social Innovation at Nova SBE in partnership with the Design Lab at NYU Makerspace. It was recorded at Fidelidad Creative Studio at Nova SBE. If you think this episode might be of interest to someone in your community, feel free to share it. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.